Lake Effect continues now on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. For years, Milwaukee County's mental health services were based on an institutional model. But as treatment options have advanced, more patients receive their care in what's known as a community-based system. Since 2010, the county has made strides in offering this kind of care, which is based on national best practices. Treating patients as individuals is a cornerstone of this kind of treatment, as research shows that patients do best under the least restrictive circumstances. Hector Colon is the director of Milwaukee County's Department of Health and Human Services. Dr. Maria Perez is a member of the Milwaukee County Mental Health Board. And Dr. John Snyder is executive medical director for the Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Division. They joined Audrey Nowakowski in the studio, and Colon began by describing the county's progress.
We've been trying to expand community-based services over the last 4.5 years. And we've done that in a pretty substantial way. We've invested over $20 million of new or enhanced community-based investments and to try to move towards a community-based approach that's more person-centered, recovery-oriented, trauma-informed, and culturally intelligent. In addition, we closed our long-term care facility. We had 150 beds of long-term care. And we did that because it was the right thing to do. It's also the law. We've actually been sued in the past for institutionalizing people that should be in the least restrictive setting in the community of their choice. But it's the right thing to do, and it's about the dignity of these individuals. And research shows that when you move forward with this, it provides better outcomes, and it's also more cost-effective. So that was a substantial initiative that we took on that we felt was very important to move individuals in the community, again, with better care, better outcomes, with dignity, and ultimately the right thing to do.
What other aspects are involved in a community-based model, and what are the benefits for all involved, not just the people affected by mental illness?
The programs that we expanded, some crisis resource services in the community. So, for example, a crisis resource center that individuals are able to go to now, receive some short-term stabilization instead of coming to the emergency room, which has truly or historically been the front door to mental health services in Milwaukee County. We've developed some crisis respite beds in the community, over 400 supportive housing units in the community, which is really important. That has provided housing supports to individuals that in some cases were previously homeless or hard-to-place individuals. So as a result of those efforts, people are now living in the community successfully and independently.
So to open this question to all of you, what kind of obstacles have you faced in implementing this new system of care, and what needs did you see in your professional lives that weren't being met by the current model?
So some of the things we've also done are related to coordination and integration. And some of the continuing obstacles are there are lots of providers, there are lots of contracts, and we have lots of partners. And continuing to work to align everyone to ensure that we're having one treatment plan so that everybody is working on the same set of goals for the patient, the client, the individual. They self-identify, these are the things I want to work on and move forward in my life, and that we all collectively each own a piece of that. And how do we integrate that across multiple people? We've added some electronic backbone to our record to be able to better coordinate and integrate those things. We've developed more community partnerships so that people do not have to come to an involuntary hospital to seek treatment. And as an entry point, I think the Crisis Resource Center and Crisis Stabilization, along with increasing crisis response, our goal is to have crisis response be that the individual thinks they need help, that it's a self-identified crisis, not that it's a statutory dangerousness situation. And what that does is that allows everybody an easier entry point to get care and help. And it also makes it more likely that there's no wrong entry point, so that wherever someone is touched, we can get them assessed, linked up, and helped in the best way we can for what their needs are.
I think what I can add to that is you were asking about obstacles. what immediately came to my mind was the paradigm shifts that continue to need to occur, not only for community members, patients and families alike, but also for providers of care in primary care and behavioral health care. In a community health setting such as the one that I serve in, we are looking a lot at integrating behavioral health into primary care. And oftentimes the access point is primary care. So it really calls upon us to be innovative and progressive in our thinking style. I think providers of behavioral health care, traditionalists, are now shifting their paradigm, whereas back in the day it was the 50-minute hour. Well, we're looking at different mechanisms of delivery of care. And I think that the more we experiment and have successes, the more innovative we can become.
And in addition to getting all the providers behind this new shift, there also needs to be a public shift or just a new perspective. There is a big stigma surrounding mental health. And what have you all experienced based on your work with people in the community, with their family members, even if they're not affected by mental health, and even the providers? What stigma is surrounding health, and how do we shift it?
The remedy to stigma really is communication and open dialogue and a willingness to hear divergent perspectives. Fear is, I think, always the primary barrier, and fear comes in many forms. Preconceived notions about what mental illness is and what mental illness brings along with it. For example, criminalization of the mentally ill, I think that's a very big stigma point. And research shows that there's this perception that, you know, if you have a mental illness, you're more likely to be a violent offender. And that's just not the case. That doesn't hold water. But again, public perception is another matter entirely. So we really do need to do a lot more education of the public sector as to what persons who suffer a mental illness are among us. If we're all honest with ourselves, we all know someone with a mental illness. So we really need to come to terms with that and embrace all of the strengths that these individuals can bring to communities.
And what has been your experience with the stigma, Dr. John?
I think Dr. Perez is correct, but I don't think it goes quite far enough. I really appreciate the opportunity to have a discussion in the media about this, because in some ways I think we're a bit challenged by media presence. 95% of homicides committed by people not diagnosed with mental illness, but a lot of the headline stories talk about the dangerousness. One in four people with severe mental illness has been a victim of a crime within the past year, according to a study in 2005. And people with psychosis are 14 times more likely to be a victim than a perpetrator of a violent crime. And I think we don't have equal press about those realities. There's also a notion of institutional stigma and individual stigma. So there are societal attitudes and institutional attitudes as opposed to the thoughts the person has themselves. So if you're brought up in a very underreactive, invalidating set of circumstances, you have a harder time advocating for yourself, and you feel like you're to blame. And the challenge with a number of people with mental illness is that's been part of their story, so that they continue to self-stigmatize themselves in addition to however the community feels about it. So that when the community has an attitude that says, oh my gosh, someone with mental illness is dangerous, then the person almost doubly hits themselves with the community view along with their own, and it makes it that much harder for them to stand up and say something for themselves, which is why we need lots of people, including the media, to partner with us and challenge those perceptions.
And Hector, what do you think the main cause or the problem of the gap between those who have mental illness and are receiving care, between those who have mental illness and are not receiving care? How do we close this gap?
Sure. I think stigma plays a role in that, in a person's willingness to say that they have a mental illness. So I have a sister who is diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, and for many years she didn't want to acknowledge that she had a mental illness. And as a result of that, she ended up in jail. She was at the behavioral health division numerous times. She had emergency detentions. Our family had to do a three-party petition at one point because she was a danger to herself and others. But once she realized that she, in fact, did have a mental illness and that it was treatable and that she could recover through active treatment and through medications, it was at that point that she began to do better in her life. And so that's pretty dominant within the Latino culture of people not wanting to admit that they have a mental illness. But it's also pretty common in the dominant culture as well. We want to try to do more in terms of stigma reduction because we believe that it's the right thing to do. And we believe that people with mental illness can succeed. I started off my career as a case manager at WCS. I also became the assistant director of the community support program at the Wisconsin Correctional Services at the time. And I saw some of the individuals come from Behavioral Health Division, in particular long-term care unit at the time, individuals that at the time were really tough and challenging clients. And I saw them transition into the community very successfully with intensive supports, but people that have previously committed homicide, individuals that have done dangerous things. But after the appropriate supports and treatment, they were able to live in the community successfully and independently.
You mentioned your sister wanted to keep on denying, I don't have anything, I don't need help. But what is the importance of greater education and just more conversations about mental illness? How can this help turn the tide and also help with this community-based model get more acceptance?
So two critical points. There is a certain degree of education and understanding. And there are certain illnesses that have what's called a nosognosio as a symptom. And what a nosognosio is a neuropsychiatric syndrome where the patient, the individual, the human being fails to recognize that the symptoms they're having are a production of an illness. Mm-hmm. About half of the people with bipolar affective disorder and about 60 to 70% of people with schizophrenia can have a nosognosio as part of their core syndrome of symptoms. It's not because they don't know well. It's not because they're not intelligent. It's because the illness itself gets in the way of understanding that this symptom is just a production of their own mind. The challenge in many ways is, on one hand, it's all in your head. But again, it really is all in your head because all the neurochemistry and all the nerves firing, all the brain tracks, that's where it is. And how do we, in some cases, disarticulate the human being from their notion? And it takes lots of engagement. It takes repeated opportunities. It takes continual options for people. Or we ultimately do just criminalize a large group of society.
And as a doctor, how is mental health care connected to our overall health and well-being and those of the people around us?
Many people would say that there is a mind-brain dichotomy. I think we're getting better at integrating care. We're better at looking at what is the health of a community, what is the health of an individual. And I think a lot of where healthcare is going is about how do we keep people both physically, mentally, spiritually, socially healthy. And what are the things we need to do to improve that? And in many cases, those are as important as treating any illness per se.
Can I piggyback on that? I think also recognizing that using strength-based models is really important. Any individual with or without a mental illness is going to thrive more when approached in a strength-based fashion. And there's a mind-brain disorder. That does not mean it's not responsive to care, compassion, and a strength-based approach that really highlights and underscores the positive things that individual can bring to society. Because we know now that psychotherapy changes the brain. And I'm just waiting for the research to catch up with more community-based studies looking at the overall health outcomes of a community.
And as the research catches up and as Milwaukee County and City catches up and your model of community-based healthcare continues to grow, what have been your personal experiences even before this shift in mental health care? What have they been and what moments of impact fuel all of your desires to stay in this field and as a motivation for changing this system?
For me, it's personal. As I say, my personal story with my sister, I've always wanted to, was always interested in people with mental illness and always wanted to make a difference. And I started off my career in mental health as well. These roles are really an opportunity to make a difference in the lives of the most vulnerable in this community. And I have truly been honored to work with such an incredible staff and board of directors, both on the mental health side and also the county side, and moving forward to advance initiatives that positively impact the lives of the people we serve. And it's an incredible opportunity to be in and to work with incredible staff to move the needle and to really fight to do the right thing and be tenacious about that. Because it's hard. There's a lot of situations that come forth that make it difficult, whether it be stigma or politics or budget or the media. There's numerous things that make this really challenging. But to have a staff and leadership that wants to do the right thing has been something that I've been honored to be a part of.
And for you, Dr. John?
I like seeing people get better. People do get better. And it's almost like watching a flower blossom. Everybody has a strength. Everybody has something that makes them likable. And I think part of, so if we go back to the late 1800s, to an old-fashioned country doctor, you really only had three interventions. You could catch babies. You could set broken bones, and you could be the silent witness to somebody's experience. And I think we underestimate how important it is to be the silent witness to somebody's experience and to go farther to cheerlead for them and to help them achieve what they really want to is such a great privilege to be allowed into people's lives that otherwise no one wants to work with and do that. And while I can articulate this, there's no way that I can capture how all our staff at the Behavioral Health Division do this day in, day out with some of the most challenging individuals there are to work with. And they do a very elegant, excellent job at it.
I will attest to that. Yeah. That's a really great question. I don't know how not to be a psychologist. I don't know how not to fall in love with psychology. I was just telling this to a student today. The interface between the mind, brain, and psychosocial forces, just the bidirectional nature of how we interact with our environment and how we affect our environment and in turn our environment affects us. I think that that's what's had me sold on really staying in this field and wanting to make an impact. Seeing the good in all, I've known many people, both personally and in the field, who struggle with a mental illness, and the value and the beauty that they've added to my own life, and to be witness to that, I think it's very humbling and it's very satisfying. So I just have to smile every day when I wake up. I get to do this for a living, and it only fuels more of a desire to be an agent of change.
Well, as you all attest to, it's important to talk about these issues, and I'd like to thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hector Colon is the director of the Department of Health and Human Services in Milwaukee County. Dr. Maria Perez is a member of the Milwaukee County Mental Health Board and director of behavioral health at the 16th Street Community Health Center. Dr. John Schneider is executive medical director for the Milwaukee County Behavioral Health Division. They spoke with Audrey Nowakowski, and there's more information at wuwm.com.